Good morning. It is 9 a.m. and welcome to the October 11th, Tuesday, meeting of the Josephine County Board of Commissioners on our general discussion. Commissioner Hare and Commissioner Heck are in attendance. Commissioner Walker is not here. We have Schmelzer in front of us. That is a fearsome thought. So, yes, ma'am.
You want me to just go ahead?
Please do.
Okay.
You're
so this discussion is about the Cameron Campbell. I came here about 2 weeks ago or so. And
I see this. These regarding County Campbell. What the heck is the County Campbell?
So last time I was here, I was told, directed basically to go back and negotiate something with Cameron and bring it back to you. So I've sat down with Cameron, I've sat down with Kenny Hoke from the Revolving Loan Fund, and we came up with some possible terms to get that money paid back. And before we get into the details of this, I just want to explain to you where I was coming from with the terms that I had proposed to them. One was, my main goal is to get the money paid back. You know, I look at it that the county's not in the business of getting rich or making money off of these loans. We, at this point, we're getting our money back. I also want to make sure that we don't bankrupt this man so he can continue to stay in business and then also reinvest in the community. So I wanted to make sure his payments were low, affordable, guaranteed that we could get it paid back without some default in there. So these are the terms that I came up with. And it was agreeable to them. We went back and forth a little bit on some stuff. And basically, I'd also proposed to Kenny Hoke that he actually, rather than the county be in the business of administering loans and trying to collect on bad debt, that be a function of the RLF program, and that they would get their admin fee of 1.5% to administer it. And the county would get 0.5%, which isn't... Like I said, it's really not a lot of money, but at least it shows good faith that we're getting our money back and we're following up with this loan.
Great.
Yeah. So are we going to get I would imagine we will be receiving invoices for services rendered by Mr. Camp and or his crew on anything that they might do now for the county?
I think we could still request a annual update, semi-annual update or something like that. I think that was the original stipulation of the loan. I don't know that we asked, or the grant loan thing. The other thing is that I think this should be a substitution for the revolving loan fund payment. So for a quarter, we just don't pay that. That would have been, you know, the $25,000 we would have paid is this advance. And so it could be officially theirs.
Well, we've already given them this $25,000.
I know that. I don't know if you were part of this or that did this.
Mm-hmm.
But as a substitute, we have an agreement with SBDC and IBCDO. They're not using that money, or they haven't been. They've got 9 loans and maybe $50,000 still sitting there, so they don't need another payment. The next time they do get a quarterly payment, this would be the quarterly payment.
Oh, I understand what you're saying.
This rolls into their loan program to where it goes off of our books almost. We keep that $25,000 we would have given them, and that stays with you.
I understand what you're saying. So if this is repaid back, rather than continue to give them money,
it comes back to that loan program.
Right.
We already got our money, so this could be in their portfolio.
So then,
technically right now, this is outside of their loan portfolio, but it should be. It's in the NIV.
Yeah.
It's under that auspice,
yeah,
this would be a real positive for them.
Yeah, this is maybe before we took that step of saying, I don't think you're good at all.
But I think it could work. Kind of get it out of your wheelhouse.
Sure. So, Commissioner, you're thinking then that this 25% would substitute for the next 25% we were going to give them? Yes. That this would substitute for that?
Yep.
Instead of this is just an additional 25% for them to put into the program. Okay. All right.
For a quarter, I think they can go. I think they've got money. What Arthur tells me, they haven't administered all of the money that they've been given.
They haven't.
So I don't think they should be given any more. Give them a loan that's part of their portfolio that can be you know, there's a repayment schedule, you've already good to go, in my opinion.
One of the challenges that I've had with them is the agreement we have, the way it's written with them. They think they are entitled to the $25,000 every quarter. And I've argued, no, that's as needed, not to exceed $100,000 in a year. And they have come back and said, no, that's not what the agreement says.
Well, it doesn't matter what the agreement says. We'll change the agreement. Your expectation is.
This is a good time to actually amend that agreement to reflect this and open that back up.
Sure.
Well, unless Cameron and his organization, they have some monies that they have coming in or plan to be coming in based upon this $100,000 or $15,000 loan or grant loan that they were receiving. And I don't know if they have it or not.
I don't think that would change. It would just be a different person administering the repayment schedule. It wouldn't be us. It's already going to be them. Have this roll into their portfolio, so when they're giving us a report about what they've done, they can cite this. Because otherwise, no, this is our program. This is a successful venture. I think it would help their portfolio to have that $25,000 repayment schedule.
Well,
makes a lot of sense.
And you know, that's the other advantage I see to that is Cameron and Kenny are very close.
Yeah, they're working.
They rely on each other like this, and this helps put that pressure on Cameron to keep paying it so he doesn't let his friend Kenny down, even though it's only $230 a month.
Right.
But it would keep that money coming
in. Well, and the other thing, too, from my perspective, is we have no business being in this business.
Yes.
Let's just get out of this thing. You know, that was the motivation,
that was the whole
too.
Point.
Yeah. And this is sort of a little leftover.
So when you're renegotiating the terms of that agreement, put that in there as their first.
So where do we go from here? My understanding is, if you're okay with this, this now goes to Wally. Well, I'll talk to Kenny about that part. But then this goes to Wally to draft a contract.
Whatever.
And then it'll come back to you for signature.
Sure.
Right? Is that where we're at? Okay.
It's technically this is a board decision. It should be a board signature, but it's a good question for some of these things that are higher profile like this. Do they fit within the scope of it? Because you have contracting authority to do this, probably with your liaison. I think you're up to 10.
Well, but this is what we're saying. Everything else might be perfectly right, but this needs to be done. You get it cleaned off the desk and off the bench of board action. It's not some unilateral favor or disfavor being granted to any particular group or person.
I think since the board had approved this, I would like to see the board approve the contract
sure.
on it.
Yep.
So it's just cleaner that way?
Yep.
Okay.
Totally agree.
That's all I had.
That's it?
That's it.
Not at all for right on the place.
I wish.
Okay.
Are you familiar with this email that's sitting on our desk?
Which is
regarding from Soaretti. So there's some sections that are highlighted. It only came in to Cheryl, Commissioner Walker.
I think I got a copy of that.
There is a majority of the membership. This is Soaretti, elected officials, employees, general purpose unit of government who have been appointed to represent such government. I don't know what this is talking about.
I might know what that's about, Commissioner. So when Cheryl's been going to the Soaretti meetings, she goes to the board meetings, and I go to the committee meetings. And I've been going to the board meetings as well to follow along and make sure I know what's going on with it and everything. And she has asked me a couple times to represent her at those board meetings. And I've said to her, I said, Cheryl, I think we need to define as a county.
She doesn't have the authority to do that.
Right, and I said, we need to define as a county who represents Josephine County at the board meetings.
Right.
Do we appoint a new commissioner, or do we appoint me or somebody else?
Right.
And I said, that needs to be discussed. So she was going to put it on an agenda for discussion to say, who's going to represent Josephine County on the board?
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the reason it's on this discussion.
Oh, great.
So I was not aware that was on your discussion. I thought
it was
just
sitting here. I didn't put it here.
It was handed out
last
week somehow.
Oh,
if I remember right.
I saw the highlighted version of it too, but I think it's not on any agenda for the day.
No. So I can just tell you a little bit about a little more about that if you want. So with the board, really they're getting information, but they actually vote on things.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes down to, not that, do you trust me voting representing Josephine County, or do you prefer the person who's casting that vote to be an elected person?
And well, there's two things. It should be an elected person casting that vote, but it works both ways, and we're going to change things in January. I'm not getting reports on Soul Ready. I haven't gotten a report on Soul Ready since Cheryl Walker's been liaison. But I don't get reports on RV COP. I have no idea what they're doing. I try to give reports on RV Act, but the board glosses over. There's a lot of faith that stuff is just happening, but there isn't necessarily the connection to say, well, have you thought about that? That's where the strength of having three people on a board referring things that need to be referred. And I'm sure there are things that RV COG or something somebody's talking about. I'm not sure that there's ever anything other than what we will do with the SIP cycle that the RVA cares about. You know, we set our priorities, we advocate for them, and then I report and say, we got screwed. We didn't get funded for that. What can I do to do, you know, and actually we have.
Yeah, I'm
talking about pulling out of RVA last year. I mean, those are not small deals. I wouldn't make those decisions on my own, but because you guys were up to speed. I think it's important. So I feel comfortable having a delegate, but that delegate has got to be responsible for reporting back what happened at those that are important for me to know, so that if I'm up at AOC on the Economic Development Transportation Committee, whatever, I'm aware of those things, that I'm not finding out about stuff that's happening other than when I go to sales.
Well, see, I mean, everybody who's with RV COG, there's not a whole lot of the important information that needs to be passed back. I try to relay back if there is some important, but, you know, to sit on and but, yeah, I mean, it would be, that's where the liaison system is as good as the openness of the people going to the meetings.
Right. And I appreciate that there's a filter. I don't want to know everything that's going on, but that's been a shortcoming for me, that I don't feel very connected to the economic development stuff happening.
Sure.
North Valley Sewer District project, anything. I don't. I like to know, and I don't have to, you know, be intimately involved. I just like to know.
And, you know, from a new staff person coming on, it is a little challenging for me because I'm like, okay, do we save everything for that quarterly report? You know, so I'm constantly doing this. It's much easier for me to just sit here and say, this is what's going on. This is what we're working on. We don't have that type of structure.
Not supposed to be so formal.
Yeah, well,
and if you feel more comfortable with a monthly report, so it isn't, this happened 3 months ago.
Sure.
We're happy to do that. Yours has not been a department that we've wanted. Monthlies have been required of those departments that are not fiscally sound, having challenges. That's been the real matrix to say, okay, who needs to be and who doesn't. Yours has been fine, but there's so many different things that are happening with your department, from marijuana to the consolidation. You're watching three budgets instead of just one, so it might be conducive for like a year to say, sure, we'd love to see you once a month.
Unless that becomes a bonus on you, that is just one unnecessary thing that I just don't really need.
Well, I look at it, you know, there's things I see that are definite needs that I really want to move forward with. And I have to stop myself and say, okay, now in this county, is this something these commissioners should be hearing about before I move forward? Or do you just move forward with your program? I'll give you an example. Okay.
You work with your liaison first.
Well, see, that's what I was going to say. Give your example and I'll open them up.
Okay.
All of us are your liaison to this transitional process. So you don't really have that. Because I want to know whatever issue it is that you're doing with your consolidation in all of your departments. So we talked about that.
So I'll give you a follow-up.
Yeah.
We went to the IV meeting, and, you know, they talked about the housing plan and everything. So I did my background research on that, and ran the numbers, and what I'm finding is that based on the population projections, we need 155 homes. Now, this is, I'm just talking the unincorporated area, the area I have jurisdiction. So we need 155 housing units a year to keep up with the population growth in the unincorporated area. Last year was a good year, and we actually had 109. So at that rate, we're falling behind on about 50 housing units every single year. So, you know, my head is go ahead and we need to start figuring out how we're going to address that. Is that the type of stuff that come back? I mean, I'm just assuming that you guys trust me to say, Julie, you see a need, you're going to go after and do what it takes to fix that problem. Mm-hmm. And then I would report that in my quarterly report. But how detailed do you want to be?
I think that would be the difficulty, the strengths and the weaknesses of this whole saw for this liaison thing is that it's only as good as the relationship that the liaison has with the department head and as open as the liaison is for the rest of the board. That's the strengths and the weaknesses of it. Mm-hmm. That's an overstatement. I mean, I could care less whether there's green paint or yellow paint, what you decided. I don't give a fat rep. But as to where this we're falling behind by 10 units a year,
45.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's pretty substantive. And where does that, how does that impact planning and where are we at? And I mean, to me, I would like to know that kind of
double
stuff.
Thing. So okay, so that's the so, you know, my liaison's been gone for about two mm-hmm. months here. So, you know, I've been just kind of waiting for my quarterly report or sending her stuff as it comes along, but. I guess, you know,
well, it's a really good opportunity to say that she's not your only liaison. Right now the entire board needs to be your liaison in this transition because I am I'm still chartered by the board as the building and safety liaison.
Okay.
So there's a third of your wheelhouse that is still and will remain my component.
We're not going to let you remain. We are going to vote you out.
You can't do that. I mean, cumulatively decide on where the liaisons go. And out of the three of us, planning and building...
We're in the dynamic two, where the one shift is ending. And
yeah.
Depending upon who is elected to fill that thing,
yeah.
That's going to be smooth or rough.
Well, I think what I'll do is stuff that I really am passionate about, that I really think you need to know about as commissioners... Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring forward to you, and if I bore you or you don't want to hear it, you just have to say, okay, Julia, go away. But otherwise, I'm going to bring it to you because it's stuff that I really think, if it comes up in the press or somebody approaches you, I think you need to know what's going on with those numbers.
Absolutely.
So,
for myself personally, okay, I have utter confidence in you and how you want to administer.
Okay.
I don't want to see you, though, burdened down and loaded down with all this needless stuff that you could easily have us or the liaison could be that barrier between you and whoever else might be out on after your neck, so to speak.
Sure.
Okay. I mean,
yeah, you got to punt those.
Yeah, and that should not be your concern.
Sure. And those I will. So
to use your example, that's a philosophical question that needs discussion from a policy level at the board. So if you need 45 housing units, what demographics are you looking for? They're not all, you know, working class. Some of them are probably senior citizen driven. Some are probably, you know, high-end homes. Some of them are very, very low-income homes. So where do you put your focus? Whatever it is you're going to do, it won't solve all of those problems. That's a philosophical discussion that's happening at the state, and it needs to be happening here as well. And how much do we enable, say it was low income, out in the county where there really aren't access to services for people who are in that demographic? That makes a lot more sense, and that's why they do these urban renewals and those kinds of things, of the opportunities that are afforded to people who need public transportation, who need some of these other services that aren't afforded out in the county. So why would you live 30 miles out? You need daily types of attention from whatever, public health, any of those services.
When our biggest demographic as far as poverty goes is single women with children under five. That's 25% of our population or something, poverty population. So, you know, I brainstorm on programs to help with that. You know, I talked to the realtors last week about this, and, you know, I'm in favor of things like rent blocks, which is something I think commissioners need to know about and get on board at some point, where we say, okay, so if you are under a certain income and you move into a place, the landlord cannot raise that rent for, let's say, 2 years, because how is that person going to be able to get the money for a new security deposit? They can't. You know, so what you do is you force them into a housing situation they cannot afford and cannot get out of. So, you know, ideally I would like to see Josephine County pass something to that effect, if it's possible. You know, I look at things as working with the businesses we have. So when you look at your homeless population, you have a third are homeless because they want to be homeless. A third are homeless because they have some type of addiction or other problem. And then you have a third that wants to work. Well, with that third that wants to work, a lot of them can't work because they don't have the resources to make it through to that first paycheck. So, you know, do we work with businesses to say, you will, if you hire this homeless person and he passes a drug test and yada, yada, he'll have, you give him a $200 stipend so he can get the clothes, the soap, the laundry, the bus fare to get to work until he gets that first paycheck. You know, working with businesses to say, who is willing to do that and take that? And you know what? If it works, great. We've got a new model that we can follow and promote and get people employed. If it doesn't, we learn the hard way. But it's a partnership and a gamble we have to take. And those are the type of things where I'm like, do I just go work with the businesses on my own with this? Or is this something, I think you should at least be aware of those proposals and have idea or input on them. Not that they need, I don't think they need approval. I don't think they need to be ordered or anything to that effect. I think that it just has to be a program you're aware.
Or is that even a program that's in your wheelhouse? I mean, it sounds very virtuous and stuff, but
getting people jobs right now, though.
Yeah, but I think my thing is setting yours is task. Yours is different than everybody else's task. That's something that other people are doing. That's what the Gospel Rescue Mission does. But people can't do the things that you, in your position as County Community Development Director, can do. And that's the things. Those are the things that you have to focus on. And your core priorities are the things that nobody else can do. And so that's for me, philosophically, how you say, man, that's a great idea, great program. Can I hand it off to somebody? But I have to do the things that nobody else can do. That's what you were hired for.
Yeah. Think about the see where this would be a role for, whether it's liaison or it's a commission, or to be the conduit between this idea and Salvation Army, Gospel Recognition, whatever, to be
he's
able
the
to facilitate.
Built a building down there.
Really?
So he's very well ingrained in this.
Well, that would be an ideal situation because, you know, I'm looking at the data and the problems that we have and how do you fix them.
Yes.
But I don't want to be the one out there
doing
it because that's not my area
of
expertise.
Right. Yeah. Well, not only is it not your area of expertise, dear lady, you've only got 24 hours in the day.
Yeah.
And you're already working about 23 and a half of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what you have other people for.
Yeah.
And whether one likes to own it to or not, there are certain things that I can't do.
And that's
okay. Because if something can be done, that's where I think that the facilitating others to be involved and
a convener.
Definitely
a convener element.
Yeah.
Of addressing that the element of poverty in our community from an economic development standpoint, it's huge. But implementing a program, being a cog in a spoke at a program, but implementing one.
I don't have the time to implement them, and I don't have the.
Okay. So we were on the same.
Yeah. No, I'm the thinker. I'm the idea person.
Yeah.
And then I have to hand it off to somebody else that can do it. Because that's somebody who needs to put their 40 hours just into that program.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were looking at addressing the housing element, then I would say you're looking at the code, refining the code that inhibits people from providing the opportunity for housing already. That's your job. Nobody else can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So is it affording a code change on EFU or something that allows for a small, what do they call it, tiny home or something like that? There's capacity in the system right now and could be done tomorrow if there was a code change. That's your job, is to say, oh, right here, in Article 46, blah, 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 we just put in blah, you know, whatever, and duh. Now these people can have a temporary or a non-fixed. There's some reason why they use tiny homes. They're on wheels. They're not permanent structures, and it
they're popular.
Gets around the code. That, what I mean is it gets around the code somehow that says it's okay.
Yeah, and it, so where we're at on that issue. So I'm going to go back a little bit to the fee schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have property, let's say you have 20 acres and you want to create four lots, you 5-acre lot minimum. Right now, the cost of it is unbearable. Why? There's no incentive to create these smaller lots unless you have a lot of money. So one of the fees changes I propose is to reduce that so it is affordable so people can come in and create additional lots for housing. I've also talked with the state about the whole guest house thing because right now we make provisions for guest house, which we can't. By state law, we're getting in trouble on it, and so I have to fix that problem. But on the flip side, I want to work with them, and the realtors actually had this idea saying, you know, you can have lots for farmhands. Why can't you have lots for your children? And I know from the whole brain drain thing that we raise children here, you educate them, they move away to Portland when they're making all the good money. Once they're done with a high salary and they realize they want to raise their kids, they come back. And there's no place for them to go. So why not try and encourage that by through some type of housing option that the state currently doesn't allow us to do? And it's so getting creative on some of that stuff. With the tiny homes actually are the same as a manufactured dwelling. So if it's where you can allow a mobile home, you can allow a tiny home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's getting that information out there and then making sure some of the inadequate housing is removed. Like, you're not supposed to be able to sell or live in a mobile home prior to 1969, if it was made before 1969.
Well, that's 40% of our... Oh, well, just
candy. And just so you know, too, that's one of the things that I do on the inventory is the condition and the health of the manufactured housing sector so we know where we're at with that. But So I'm looking at the housing options and the things in the code that can be changed. One thing that makes it difficult is that the state is so heavy-handed here and it's so cumbersome to change the codes, but I'm just going to keep bringing them in at you. I mean, it doesn't, you know, it's... You know how a private citizen has to pay that high fee to amend the code? Fortunately, the county doesn't have to pay that. I mean, we're paying our own time and everything, but I'm going to just keep bringing in these changes as I see them needed.
And that's the whole point of having the code codified in the first place, so that there's something to review easily, and you can say, you know, you don't have to do the research on how did this code get to where it is, what are the state statutes that correlate to it. It's all done for you, so the changing of it can be... expedited.
Yeah, which I'm really looking forward to. And they did send me, Beecher gave me a copy to review. Because there's other things. There's a state law out there. If you have 10 acres and two homes, you can actually divide that into two homes, two lots. I mean, it doesn't have to be quite 10. Our code says it has to be 10 or more. Well, what we have is we have a couple of them out there where they're poverty situations. They really need to sell that lot
mm-hmm.
to keep their home. And our current code does not allow them to do that. So that's another, I mean, so I'm looking at those changes to come in.
So I think it would really behoove you, before you make these changes, to talk with the board so that we're on the same page. You're not pursuing something philosophically. We're not going there. I think, generally speaking, the board is, the previous board especially, when we chartered the little look, right here in Josephine County with the LDAC committee to take a look at those things that can be changed. Our state statute, like you said, is very cumbersome and heavy-handed. It doesn't give a lot of local leniency.
Yeah.
So why is our code more restrictive than what the state standard is? That's the philosophical question you needed. I would like to see.
Yep, yeah. Now,
our philosophy is we don't need to be more restrictive than the state code. We need to address things that the state code does not address. That's what the local rural land development code is for, not to be more heavy-handed, in my opinion. I think the code works for a lot of other counties, and the state statute works for the state. So why? And land use is a function of the state. We administer it locally through your office.
Yeah.
I don't see that we need to be very often more restrictive.
Well, and the problem is we are more restrictive, and it's really causing problems out there.
Yeah.
So repealing
RLDC, the code that is more restrictive than state law, is very philosophically, I'm all over that. I totally support that.
In my way, and tell me if you want this in a different format, but my way of bringing those changes forward to you is just like we did on all the other ones where we come in and we discuss the need for a change, and then you say, yeah, go ahead and make the application.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start that process.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, the irony of that whole thing is here we are, this redneck conservative county, and why would we have these more excessive than very stringent state standards?
You know why? If you look back and you talk to the commissioners of the past, somebody, a couple people, came in and championed this one issue and got it through the board. 100 different issues. As opposed to the board saying, no, I hear you, but that's not what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We'll change the state code if you really feel that way. But otherwise, nah, we don't really need to do that. So go forth and... Do those things always have to go through the Rural Planning Commission if they're chartered by the board, or if they're controversial to a sense?
Well, it depends. For example, this current one with the marijuana regulations, if we were looking just at rural residential, it could have come straight to the board. But whenever it involves farm and forest zones, you have to go through the Plan Commission.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there are changes I'd want to see in farm and forest as well. So it just makes this very long, cumbersome process.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's what it takes to get it fixed, that's what we have to do.
Yeah.
One of the challenges I am having is, you know, staff is resistant to the changes, you know, and so, you know, I try to go slower, but on the flip side, it's we need to think about the public at the current time. And
that's the number one priority.
I think.
The staffing, they either come in to, this is what we're doing, or they find something else to do. And I don't want that to be cold-hearted at all. But that resonates in public health, public works, forestry, parks. None of them are an exception to that philosophy.
Right.
We're doing things different, or you're not going to survive here. And everybody else has figured that out. They're figuring it out if they haven't. I know that parks has. I know that the fairgrounds has. I know that forestry has. Public health is coming into that. Public works will come into that. They have no choice. They're losing $1 million of revenue a year. They will figure it out. Your office is not going to be any different. So, you know, you know how, you're the manager.
Yeah.
But our priority is things are done to reflect within state law how we can get things done.
Yeah, the old adage, the tail does not wag the dog.
Yeah.
The terms I always use are you either roll with me or you get out of the boat. And I've got great staff, and you know, it's a lot of changes.
Sure.
But I really think, you know, the majority of them are just going to keep coming along because they see the results. They see they're already seeing, I think, the positive response from the public on some of the changes that we have made.
Yeah. So somebody that I meet with regularly is facilitating some sort of a couple land use things. And consistency is key. You have a front office staff person who, if they don't know the answer, don't make it up.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give it out. Check. Because that really bothers me. And if you don't know, don't say anything.
Good question. I've got to look at that.
Yeah.
Okay, what's wrong with it?
Right.
And then you only answer it once because you know the answer
right
now.
Yeah.
Rather than the person coming back several times. And this is not somebody who's not thorough. If they're coming back, they're not their mistake. They don't mess around. So That was something I just wanted to pass on. Otherwise, I'm hearing very good things mm-hmm. in your office yes. from the public. That they're very receptive to the change, but that momentum has to be consistent, or otherwise it's like three steps forward, four steps back, and that takes forever. So, yeah.
I see a lot of really positive. I see good things happening already, and I can't wait to see some of these other ones come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, everything from changing the code to allow more agritourism to increase the economy and stuff like that. And
yeah.
There's just a lot that has to be done.
That's going to be really positive.
Philosophically, tiny homes. I don't have a great compassion towards tiny homes that are clumped together. You know, you've got 10 tiny homes and they have a common restroom or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have any great compassion toward that at all, because that is simply, to me, is allowing them to continue their behavior that finds them in need of a home, tiny home, rather than saying this tiny home is a transitional place for you to now begin to grow and to develop into some other place. And sometimes the clumpage allows the negative behaviors that have found them in need of these places in the first place to simply be rewarded. And I believe strongly in the capitalistic concept that I will go after that which I can benefit me. And if I can be irresponsible, have all my food provided, have all my basic needs provided, I'll continue being irresponsible. And that, to me, it denigrates the human nature to want to grow, want to develop, want to better. And I would be a slow buyer on that tiny home concept.
The only
in a clumpage situation
that I'd have is that not all people aspiring to the tiny home philosophy are low income.
Oh, sure. No.
Or, I mean, I can see the shows that are out there on tiny homes. These people are not low income. They're investing, you know, $50,000
sure.
in a trailer that's really nice.
Oh,
they
sure.
want that smaller. They want to be outside.
But oftentimes we have it today is we need to have some
solution.
As a solution to this poverty situation. No. We've got all these homeless people, and we need to give them a place to stay. Yeah. And if you give them a place to stay, then there's going to be a swamp of whatever could be in it for sure.
I completely agree with what you're talking about. If you're going to do it in that fashion, that's what the Jackson County Housing Authority, mm-hmm. they built structures in the same area. It's very well regulated.
Yeah.
There's an on-site
yeah.
person. Nobody can smoke on that campus.
Mm-hmm.
I know, because they come to the public street,
sure.
that borders my place, and they smoke there. And so that's
sure.
you're absolutely right.
Sure.
There is a principle to the distribution of tiny homes on properties where there's a one-to-one relationship mm-hmm. with somebody who signed up with that, who holds that person accountable, who separates them
right.
from that community and puts them into a better mentoring type of a relationship.
Sure.
And that has merit in my
yeah.
mind.
Yeah, I've seen some good models. You know, if
yeah.
you're doing drug testing and if they have to take ownership, they have to have
mm-hmm.
a job, they have to do grounds work or be part of the community garden mm-hmm. on the property and, you know, invested in it so it is a
yeah.
home
right.
and something they're accountable to. Those models work.
Yes.
But, yeah, if... And the other thing is, so we'd want that on public sewer, which we really don't have the space, and I think we have a lot of the not in my backyard philosophy yet
mm-hmm.
in some of our urbanized
yeah,
areas.
Understandably so. But I do think that if there was, if a living just taking place, I have a place down in Wonder, and I've got 5 acres, and I want to build a 2 600-square-foot homes that can be used, rented out to these kinds of folks, whatever that might be.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I think should be looked at in some way. How can we facilitate that to provide a transition spot that's under supervision? This is on my property. I want to take care of it. And those things can be done. But just to stick up, you know, 10 community homes
Yeah, I think where we have a lot of opportunity, I think where we have opportunities for the tiny housing is with our medical hardship program. Because one of the problems we have is people get these medical hardships, and when the medical hardship's done, they're not removing the home. At least with a tiny home, it's easier to remove, so you can get compliance easier. Or in some of these farm zones where you can have a manufactured home or a mobile home for the farm hand, and then they don't get removed and they get run down. In those instances, perhaps you're better off with the tiny home because, again, it's easier to pull out of there when they're done with it. So,
yeah. But
okay. They're all easy answers.
Yep.
In time.
Yep.
So.
All right. Thank you for
thank you.
Doing.
That's it. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Mr. Hare, do you have any other important issues?
No, I thought I should make you aware. I was appointed. I applied 2 years ago for the Resource Advisory Committee for the BLM. I got appointed to the Resource Advisory for the Forest Service.
Really?
And so I'll be, I guess I'm on that for 2 years. It's a 4-year appointment that I'm only.
So they have meetings where?
Well, I don't really know. It doesn't spell out yet. It's forthcoming. But this is the Southern Oregon, probably. Yeah. It comes from Secretary Vilsack. The appointments are done by the secretary.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy that there was talk. There's talk of legislative changes for that because apparently that's how it's required to be done. But it's kind of a ridiculous thing where the state director or the local elected should do it. So I would imagine it's for the Siskiyou Resource Advisory Committee. Maybe I did it. I don't know which one. Kenny Houck is on this.
Oh.
Susan Brown from Coos, Curry County, I mean.
Congratulations. Coup to you, but also a benefit of the county.
It will be a benefit, I suppose. I like, I've had a really pretty good relationship of working with the Forest Service, or we have in general. I don't know that I have. Any more so than anybody else. I was made aware, did you reach out to the new BLM director, Southern Oregon BLM director?
Not intentionally.
Oh.
I mean, we have not done anything as far as the board goes.
No, you specifically, because Rocky was over there meeting with them, the executive director of ONC, and mentioned, the director mentioned that you had reached out and wanted to invite them to a meeting. I can't remember if we asked you to do that, but that certainly sounds like a good thing to do.
I think it's a great thing to do, and that's the reason I took the initiative.
I'd like to see you do that. If you wouldn't mind, they already are. So reach out to them, and I would invite them to their own, not a joint. Well, it doesn't matter. Matthew Pachorik and I, we don't have much. We don't have much to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, bring her in with Alan Walshweiler. Anytime for a general discussion. I think she needs to meet the board. And
I think if you're on this
interim, well, that's the Forest Service. I'm happy to reach out. Yeah. Everybody seems to have met with her, except for me. So I'm not really sure. I just haven't taken it upon myself
but
reach out.
She came someplace.
Really?
I thought that she came here one of the meetings with Alan. I don't.
She's only been in for maybe 2 months.
Well, I can't imagine how.
How would I not?
How I have done anything. I mean, I don't know.
Sounded good to me. I was
going
to go get him.
Well, I'm thankful.
But I don't know. We can figure out. I think she should come in just like Rob McWhorter came in and gave the presentation on the transportation plan that they approved, which I thought was really good, very thorough. It would be really, I think,
I think it would be a good idea to have her come in. Come in with Matt or something. And
With Alan.
And just come in and say, okay, great, or whatever.
Huh. Well, maybe Commissioner Walker can reach out to Alan, and Alan can extend an invitation to come.
It might be spur to him to come as well.
Yeah. Supposed to show up at the next one.
Yeah. Okay. You have anything else, sir?
Probably.
We have the county challenged the state fence requirements.
Yes, for marijuana, they have removed that, or?
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
That's good.
Oh, shit.
Those are not so unsightly.
Common.
Oh, no kidding.
That's commonsensical. We as a board want to send a letter to...
yeah, Julie should have.
Julie should
have dropped a letter or something. Yeah. Okay. Commissioner Walker and Julie should work together.
Okay.
Commissioner
Walker and Julie will draft a letter of appreciation to the state on the...
I did talk to our esteemed office manager about a program to help address your request, which I totally agree, of having not just what we do like that, mm-hmm. a sign put on their due date next Friday or something like that. Jenny had an idea for a program that was different than Excel or something like that. It's a program for this, and then you had this meeting and you do this. It's a tracking for projects. She likes her program, so they're talking. And someday, we're going to have that implemented.
That'd be great.
I'd like to see that as part of our administrative meeting.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, for board business, that's where Wendy comes in and presents mm-hmm. these are the projects and stuff like that.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Great.
Did you got one of these too? Didn't you? These flyers and mm-hmm. such. You want?
I offered some guidance on how to develop it. Pulling out the elements of our county rate, comparing them to other taxing districts mm-hmm. within. She did that. There's the 13.4 cents per thousand, 2 cents per thousand that goes to the jail that makes it look like when we collect 80 cents, 81 cents for the county, we're not keeping all that. People are like, where's the 58 cents when they look at that?
Mm-hmm.
And then the section that was challenging for me to understand was the compression. The avoided revenue not collected because of the $10 and $5 mm-hmm. restriction. So, yeah.
But I would like to see the amended, this becoming as well-known, distributed as possible.
This should be, this is different than what I did, but maybe she just rearranged it. I don't know. This is not what I saw. I mean, these are the numbers. This isn't the layout. You just want this to see, you want to see this distributed?
Yeah.
So
put that online. And
we need to. Yeah. We need to put it online. We need to figure out what goes out in the tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's probably one of these. We did the dollar chart before, but it's probably a different illustration about where you're, what's taxable.
Right.
Most of it is not. And then where the taxable money goes. Right. Maybe it's just with this. I can see us paying. I mean, elements of this are on the tax bill. This is not on the tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this isn't on the tax bill. I'll work with Connie and Eve to put together
a proposal. No, that would be good.
When they go out.
Be
November will be here before you know when those tax bills go out. And it's, yeah, the time to prepare for that is now.
No, it's 2 months ago.
Probably. Well, they've been doing it. We don't have to reinvent it.
No.
They've done great work.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic.
No, Connie and Eve worked together really well down there to capture the stuff pretty well.
Okay. Anything else, sir?
I don't think so.
So we have no other meetings today. So it is 9:49, and this meeting is finished.